Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Step blocked by Jaylen Brown.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
Over the shoulder pass for Al Horford for the two-hand slam.
With Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hour number two here, 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Arcan in for Murray. Chris Gasper here as well. It is the 98.5 The Sports Hub Celtics Show, which is basically the entire program. I think all 3 hours we're probably going to be on these Celtics here. As a lot of people woke up this morning feeling angry. Certainly shell shock after this team. I thought it was going to be a party last night, Gasper. I think everybody did. Everybody was expecting a party downtown last night. And instead, Jimmy Butler ruined the party. He was the party pooper, so to speak.
He was.
As now we got to head back down to Miami. Maybe it's just that. Maybe the Celtics wanted one more night down on South Beach. And so they took it easy last night. Whatever it was certainly not what Vegas was expecting. Celtics were 8.5-point favorites. They had momentum going into this. They had just won a big game five, and I think everybody and their mother was expecting them to win. Even the Miami people. I was reading Lebatard and his producers and all those guys, and they were all counted Miami out too. And you know, they're a bunch of honks down there. So like I was sitting there going, this is it. It's over. I did the whole pregame show, Gasper, and it was all just, you know, setting the parade route. That's all we were doing. And man, I felt like an idiot after the show, and I feel even dumber today. I really do. You know, like counting out Jimmy Butler was probably the first mistake. But I mean, that team, Butler, Lowry, Tucker, those guys are all 33 and over, and they looked like they were in quicksand in game five. Really? I mean, everybody looked like they were in quicksand in game five, except for Derek White somehow. But, you know, just to see them bounce back like that and play that kind of game, Butler in particular, after as dreadful as they looked in game five. Man, I mean, these guys, you talk about load management, you know, but it seems like that's real in this series. Like, it's really, these guys are resting up, they're taking entire halves off, and then they're ready for these next games. It's unbelievable.
So along those lines of what you just said, Arcan, what would lead you to believe that Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry, PJ Tucker, et cetera, all of whom are banged up, that they can do this again, that they can deliver two times in 3 days?
It's the two times in 3 days that has me skeptical, but
yeah,
they've done it, you know, this game every other night, and they've done it just about every other game. So like, you know, like that's sort of where I stand with it right now. Have they done it two games in a row? No, that's true. You got me there, but I don't know. I mean, I didn't think they had a prayer last night. I didn't think they had a snowball's chance in hell.
No, I didn't either. You're right. I was dead wrong too. And also part of it was, I guess I had written this in the Globe, in my column. I thought the Celtics had really found sort of their basketball killer instinct in game five. You know, the way they unspooled that, you know, 24-2 run, and they just sort of crushed the Heat and took their hearts. I was like, okay, these guys figured it out. You know, now they know what it takes to close. They have a finishing maneuver now. This is it. You know, they were able to, you know, find their rock bottom.
Yeah.
You know, or their choke slam or whatever, you know, whatever you want to, their perfect plex, whatever move you want to go with in wrestling history. And I was like, great. They have their finisher. They have it. And then they didn't. They gave the Heat life, and they gave them confidence in that first half. And even in the fourth quarter, when the Celtics did battle back to their credit to take the lead, Miami was a team that executed better under pressure. And again, I just feel like sometimes the Celtics have this sort of inflated opinion of themselves, where they feel like, you know, if they flash their best basketball for a certain period of time, the other team should be intimidated, daunted, dissuaded from even trying to compete. And that's not going to happen against the Miami Heat. The one thing the Heat are going to do, even when they were struggling in game five and at other points in this series, the Heat are going to compete. They're going to bring physicality. They're going to bring the fight. They might not bring much offense or much firepower, but physicality, fight, competitiveness, they're going to give you that all the time. And the Celtics better wake up and realize that this is not a team they're going to be able to just intimidate into backing down.
Yeah. You know what I thought last night was going to be, Gasper? You remember 20 years ago, the Celtics played the Sixers in the first round? It was the year after Iverson went to the finals. And it was the next year, it was the Celtics with like Kedrick Brown and Paul and Antoine and all those guys.
Yeah.
And they played, it was the best of five back then. And in game five, the Celtics blew them out. They beat them by like 50. And that's what I thought was going to happen last night. Like, ooh. I thought it was going to be one of those type of games, you know, where it's like over after the first quarter and Kedrick Brown's in the end and shooting three pointers with Walter McCarty. Like, that's what I was expecting to see happen. And it was basically the polar opposite of that. There's some calls on the line that we'll get to here in just a minute. And yes. I feel like we have to at least address this, even though I don't think it was all that important. The refereeing last night. Thoughts on that, Gasper?
Yeah, too involved for me, and sort of too inconsistent. You know, I'm not a Zach Zarba guy. I feel like he's a budding. Why am I drawing a blank now? You know who I'm talking about.
Foster?
Scott Foster. Scott Foster. Yeah. I feel like he's a budding Scott Foster, where he wants you to know it's his game, and he's one of the guys calling the game. I thought Eric Lewis called it too tight. Between those two guys, it was sort of like, what you ever go to one of these bars and it's, you know, a piano bar and it's dueling pianos.
Yes.
that's what this felt like a battle between Zach Zarba and Eric Lewis for the soul of this contest. And that was, you know, I came to see Heat versus Celtics, not Zach Zarba versus Eric Lewis. I thought they were terrible.
No excuse for that many foul calls. No excuse for it. Did I think that it favored one side or the other? Honestly, no, I don't. I really don't. Two of the Miami Heat starters fouled out in this game. The Celtics shot more free throws. There were some bad calls, and I'll tell you, the three worst calls of the game, these are the ones that stuck out to me. I remember them perfectly because I remember thinking, holy crap, how do you call that? The offensive foul on Jason Tatum was horrible. That was a horrible call. I thought that was just, there's no place for that in a regular season game.
Yeah.
Definitely not in a playoff game.
So did you think that was worse than the offensive foul call on PJ Tucker?
I thought that was another bad one. I thought that was a bad one, too.
Smart, like, twisted his arm,
yeah,
and he just tried to free it and, like, accidentally hit Jaylen Brown in the face.
Yeah.
And they said offensive foul on P.J. Tucker, no foul on – because I'll be honest, I thought that call was worse than the Tatum
one. Yeah. Okay. So let's make it four then. We can add to the list. That's the Tatum one. The PJ Tucker one's a good one too. I liked how Brown had the thing in his nose afterwards.
That was
a nice touch. Let's see, the out of bounds, Horford and Butler, where Butler clearly touched it and your guy was standing there staring right at him. And they called it Miami ball. I could not believe that one either. That one was ridiculous. And
absolutely.
What was the third one?
That was the worst one of the night.
That might have been one of the worst
that
calls
was
I've
horrible.
Ever seen. The guy
that was no excuse for that in a closeout game. You can't miss that call. Although I will say I'm not excusing them. I really wish Udoka would stop wasting challenges on Grant Williams' obvious fouls. Like, in Grant Williams' mind, he's never committed a foul. Like, to me, if I'm Udoka and Grant Williams is telling me to review it, I need four assistant coaches to all unanimously tell me I should look at this before I even consider it. Because has Grant been right one time when he's told them I didn't foul this guy?
Yeah, and even if you don't challenge that, so what's the worst that happens? Grant Williams, who's been useless, gets his fifth foul, and you just get on with your life. Like, that was a bad time to do that, I thought. You're right about that.
And it was an and one, so Butler had already made the hoop.
Yeah, he's getting the basket anyway. All you're maybe challenging here is the and one. That's exactly right. That was a really bad time for that. And you're also right that Ime Udoka, as soon as someone turns around and gives the old twirly finger, says, oh, yeah, we got to challenge you. He does it every single time, and he often loses. I mean, he often loses the challenge. And that's it's stupid. I think it's stupid that when you win a challenge, you don't get another one.
I agree.
Then what's the point? You know, that you don't get any reward for getting it right. It's the same as if you got it wrong. Like, that's stupid. You should get another one. If you get it right, you should keep going until you get one wrong, I think. But, you know, either way, that was not a great performance there by any means.
It was a bad
performance by the referees, but I'm sorry. I can't get behind the idea that they're trying to screw the Celtics. If you do that, you don't foul out two Heat starters. They were just calling a lot of fouls. That's all. You know, they called a lot of fouls on both teams. Celtics shot more free throws. You know, that's sort of how I look at it. 617-779-0985. Matt is in Braintree with a thought on the refereeing. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, real quick though, this just isn't a championship team yet. You know, they closed that game out last night. If they win Sunday, they're going to get demolished by the Warriors. It's going to be a slaughter fest. I just think with the refs, I am sick and tired. And they were very even down the middle, but I'm sick of watching these games. It's going to go on forever, but I'm sick of watching these games where the last, you know, 10 minutes is not about each possession. It's about, okay, I'm tempering myself to what the refs are going to call this trip down for both teams, not for just the Celtics or the Heat. It's just, it's terrible. It's very exhausting.
Yeah, I'm with you, Matt. And that was, there was no reason for that. You know, you finally have a good game. That was the real tragedy of it, I think, Casper, is that for the first time in the entire freaking series, both teams were playing pretty hard and neither team was like embarrassing themselves. And you can't say that about any other game. Every single other game, at least one of the two teams, if not both of them, completely was a disgrace. I mean, that's, you know, it's the first time that wasn't the case. And these referees just would not get out of the way.
Let them go. There were 19 personal fouls whistled in the fourth quarter. Ugh, 19.
Jesus. Really?
19.
19 foul? My God.
19.
That's worse than
I thought.
In the fourth
quarter.
That's brutal.
I believe that's the most in any quarter. I think that's the most in any quarter of the – oh, actually, no, that's not true. But it is true. I take it back. Yes, okay. That was the most in any quarter of the game. The 19 they whistled in the fourth.
Man.
Ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. 617-779-0985. When we come back, we'll be joined by Brian Robb, B-Robb, if you're 98.5 The Sports Hub, and also at Mass Live. We'll talk to him next.
1 hour each week at noon on Saturdays. The Sports Hub Celtic Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is the Sports Hub Celtic
Deep
Show.
Three. Got it.
With Casper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You're too loose with it. Them coming out physical and us being caught off guard, which we shouldn't be at this point, but understanding who they are. And like I said, it's the same type of turnovers. It's getting poked away or, you know, playing in the crowd and us being surprised that they're going to reach, hold, grab, and do what they do. And so got to be better as far as that. Obviously, we'd like to get off to a better start. We got better as the game went after 11 or 12 in the first half. But at that point, we were down 13 and had timely ones, costly ones late in the game.
Ime Udoka after the game. Not a great night for him. Not a great night for the Celtics either as we're going on to a Game 7. A Game 7 most of us thought wasn't going to be necessary, but here we are. And joining us right now in the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, your friend and mine, the great Brian T. Robb, joins us here on the program as it's Arcan and Gasper. Hey, B-Robb, how are you?
What's going on, boys?
Eh, not too much. Just sitting here wondering where it all went wrong. What was the main takeaway from this game? And I saw you were tweeting a lot, and there's a bunch of stuff I want to talk to you about. But if you had to narrow it down to one thing that the Celtics have to change and improve on going into Game 7, what would it be?
I mean, it's the turnovers. That's how they started the game, 18 on the night, and it's a simple formula for any time they've lost this postseason against teams like the Heat or the Bucks that just don't have a lot of firepower in the half court. If you give them life, you give them easy offense, then you give them a chance. And they were playing from behind for most of the night because of that. And obviously they had their chances late in the fourth quarter as well. But if they don't, you know, spot them a double-digit lead in the first half with a bunch of, you know, bad mistakes, whether it's charges or bad passing, whatever, like that's the formula. And that's, if they want to win Game 7, that's what they're going to have to clean up first and foremost.
B-Robb, you know, when you look at the second half of this game, Tatum and Brown weren't involved, I think, to the degree that the Celtics would like them to be involved and to the degree that Celtics fans would like them to be involved in terms of the shots. They took a combined 7 shots in the second half. What happened there? Was it something that Miami was doing with the double teams? Or did the Celtics just sort of get away from going to their two best players?
No, I mean, I think it was, first and foremost, I think it's the way that the Heat were defending is they were selling out a lot on both those guys. And it was to a degree with Tatum where, I mean, he took 12 attempts, guys, on the night. That was his second lowest total of shot attempts for the whole season. And his lowest was just in like a blowout win when he only played 25 minutes. So for him to only take 12 shots in 45 minutes it's a credit to the Heat defense for the way they collapsed and threw two or three bodies at him. But B, it's a fact that Tatum was, I'd say, probably deferring a little bit too much down the stretch at times. And part of that was you see the 7 turnovers to force this, and he was, you know, going to a crowd and trying to make some tough plays out of that crowd. But on a night where no one else in the Celtics offense really had it going outside of Derek White and Jaylen Brown in the first half, like, that was a night where you wouldn't mind it if Tatum forced it a little bit more and got a little more aggressive in those stretches where, you know, he got to the line 8 times, you know, kind of put the pressure more on Miami. And so from that standpoint, there are going to have to be adjustments made by him, probably by Ime Udoka, in terms of, you know, how to get Tatum in better spots and how to punish the Heat defense even more if they play like that. But between that and then, I mean, we saw, you know, Jaylen Brown obviously had a rough fourth quarter as well on that front in terms of being passive, and then, you know, at the end maybe getting a little bit too aggressive when he should have been looking for a three, particularly on that last turnover. And so obviously both those guys almost got them to the finish line, but they needed to, you know, maybe pull the team a little bit more on a night where outside of Derek White, there just wasn't much going on for that Celtics offense.
B-Rob, after the game, Jaylen Brown talked about taking what the defense was giving them, and I think that's exactly where things went wrong. I mean, the Heat would let Tatum drive in, and then they'd collapse on him. And rather than pull up and take a jumper over Kyle Lowry, who he's about a foot taller than, he, you know, kept kicking it out to Smart or kicking it out to Horford or just kicking it out and never really attacking. And, you know, I sort of thought we were past that. Like, that reminds me of 2017, you know, in that series with LeBron where Tatum had this great fourth quarter and then didn't touch the ball for the last 6 minutes. And I'm sitting here, you know, all this time later, and I feel like that hasn't really changed. Like, how could that still be a problem?
Yeah, I mean, he was asked about it, Sarkhan, to your point, you know, after game 5, being like, hey, how is this going to be different? You guys had this 3-2 situation before,
right?
In 2018, and, you know, we saw this play hook, and yeah, they weren't as atrocious as they were in that game 7 at home against the Cavs. But like you said, those a lot of the similar issues coming up to Bruce, where you have Tatum and Brown, you know, not being involved enough in the offense down the stretch. And then, you know, Marcus Smart leading the team in shot attempts. And he didn't go nuts in the fourth quarter there. He only had 3 shot attempts there, but he had a real bad one, I thought, with 3 minutes left on the clock where he just pulled up with, you know, nothing going on after an empty possession. And, I mean, the rest of the night, Al Horford, you know, gave them next to nothing for most of the night. And Derek White did his best to kind of keep him alive there, but they just needed one more guy to step up on this night. And so if that wasn't happening, you know, you needed Tatum and Brown to do more. And obviously they didn't, you know, have the ability to do that down the stretch, whether you want to credit Miami for that or just wanting them to just be a little more aggressive. Either way, it doesn't matter now. But it's something that Ime Udoka and all those guys are going to have to look at heading into game 7 here.
And just, you know, sort of finishing up at least my thoughts on looking back to game 6, B-Rob, when we talk about Tatum and Brown and some of the issues in this particular game, how much of that do you put on the point guard in terms of Marcus Smart, you know, to get those guys shots, to get those guys the opportunities? Because I think you can look at the point guard and the coach and say, okay, if Jaylen Brown and Tatum and really more Brown are not getting the looks they need, the opportunities they need, you know, we have to find a way to get them those shots. And it just didn't happen. It just didn't happen on this night at all. And you're looking at Marcus Smart in a game with 3 assists and 2 turnovers.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Chris, in terms of, like, they're going to probably, when they're going through this film today, I think, you know, clearly the formula, like, they were playing into Miami's hands for a lot of that, you know, second half in terms of, like, offensively. They'd have stretches where they'd get it going, but then Miami would, you know, lure them into a bad turnover or just a bad decision or a bad shot selection with the ball not getting to the right person on those plays. And so I credit, you know, Tatum and Brown did what they could for a lot of the night in terms of, like, trying to make the right pass, but the Heat were, you know, from jump straight, I think, like, really, you know, jumping passing lanes and, you know, figuring out what the Celtics wanted to do on those rotations. And so Ime Udoka, Marcus Smart, like, those, that's when you have to get creative in terms of, okay, how do we get the ball to our guys, especially Tatum, who was just, you know, 9 of 12, 4 of 7 from 3. He was on fire from pretty much all night long. And so for him to, you know, only take that few shots on the night where he hasn't going that much, I think is inexcusable. And I think, yeah, you have to, the finger pointing has to go just as much to the guys orchestrating the offense. And, I mean, it's too bad for Udoka. I think Udoka's had a really good series up until game 6 there, but he obviously didn't, you know, push the right buttons down the stretch there to get this, you know, get them to the finish line.
We're talking to B-Rob, Brian Robb of Mass Live. B-Rob, I saw you tweeting about this last night, and I noticed it during the game, too. how is Markieff Morris allowed to stand on the court? Like, why? They get the ball in the corner, and Al Horford's shooting a three, and Markieff Morris has a foot on the court, not like on the line, on the actual court. Are they going to, is something going to happen with that? Like, how is that allowed?
I think you think like the Heat were watching like Mavs bench game film before game six here. Being like, okay, how can we maximize our chances here? Because it was egregious, and I mean, you don't mention see it as much in real time, but the Horford one was the one that stuck out for me when he missed that three with 3 minutes left, and Kyle Lowry almost gave him a headbutt to like the back on the play, and you could see a Heat assistant coach kind of have their hands in the air when they had their front of the sideline, but. I kept looking for more film over the rest of the night, Arcan, and then I found that Markieff Morris shot, and I was like, wow, like, this is just, like, there's, like, your foot's on the sideline, then there's, like, no, your foot is flat out on the court here. And so I assume Miami's going to get a fine, just like the Mavs got at some point, but given the nature of the stakes of this game and, you know, the moments where that came up, I would hope that they, you know, the officials keep an eye out for that more, given how much of a, you know, a sixth man the Heat bench was in a few of those key spots.
B-Rob, I want to sort of go big picture on you here. You know, I think the Celtics are going to win this game. I do, because it's just sort of their way. You know, they don't bring their best until they have to, and now they have to. But if somehow they don't win on Sunday and they lose, and now you have that core of Tatum, Brown, and Smart goes to three conference finals and has lost all three of them as a core, what are the repercussions from that? Or maybe there aren't any repercussions. The Celtics just look at, hey, we were the best team in basketball for the last 3 months. We think we found something and we'll just keep going. And that overrides the fact that these three guys have been to three conference finals and haven't won any of them.
Yeah, honestly, I think it's a lot going to depend on how game seven goes, Chris, in terms of like, even if they put up a valiant fight and still lose, but you know, but Butler and Lowry and Adebayo like just take things to a different level. I don't think there are long-term repercussions from a quarter perspective. If it's a mess of a game and, you know, Tatum and Brown really struggle or other guys and within the supporting cast just look overmatched, then I think you have to, again, look at the big picture here and see, okay, obviously Tatum and Brown aren't going anywhere, but like, how can we, if we weren't able to get to the finish line against a, you know, a beat up Heat team, how's it going to look in the next couple of years against, you know, a fully loaded Eastern Conference that it's healthier and even more motivated going forward with Chris Middleton back, et cetera. I think everything's on the table if they lose game seven ugly in terms of like what you're going to do with the supporting cast around Brown and Tatum. But that's going to be, I think, a lot in terms of how they're going to read into this series and how they're going to read into this playoff run is going to depend on, like, again, who shows up the most tomorrow night and how it just looks all together in terms of the type of fight they put up in a game seven on the road, where obviously historically the odds are very much against you in that spot.
Right. Or they could just throw the injury excuse out there too, right, if they lose game seven.
I mean, if anyone throws an injury excuse out in the series, it has to be Miami. And then you have, I mean, especially the Tyler Hero wild card in play there. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, Marcus Smart isn't the reason they lost last night by any means, first and foremost, but for him, you know, he had a rough defensive night on Jimmy Butler, I thought, and, you know, him going for 40 minutes in that game, if that ankle was bad in the first place, so you wonder just how much, you know, the push and pull of that is for game seven for Ime Udoka when you have to balance again. If he's, you know, you want Marcus Smart on the floor, obviously, but if Marcus Smart is still not close to 100%, you know, how much you're going to, you know, ride with him into the 40s for a game like this.
Speaking of guys who may not be 100%, and we'll let you go on this one, B-Rob, Robert Williams, I know he was set to check in, and then Horford made that three, and so he went back to the bench. We didn't see him for 1 second of that fourth quarter. Was that just sort of odd timing, or is maybe there a reason they were holding him out?
I think that was a gut call by Ime Udoka.
Okay.
Once Horford hit that three, and he was asked about this today. It's a good question, Arjen, because it was like everyone's like, okay, what that was he, you know, did he feel something? Like, why did he get pulled away from the bench, from the scorer's table. But I think that was a situation where Horford was really bad for most of the night, but he hit that three and then he assisted a Derek White three. And that was enough for Ime Udoka to say, hey, okay, I'm going to ride a foul here over Robin. You know, in hindsight, I think you can make the case either way there. Obviously Al Horford's spacing, he's been terrific all postseason, but he was bad for most of last night, and that hurt them a lot. And so Rob was at least giving them some easy offense there in the third quarter. Obviously, he was a bit more of a liability defensively as a perimeter, but adds a huge wild card factor there. But with the Heat just deciding to go super small now more than ever, it's tough to play those guys together, obviously, down the stretch. And so that's going to be one of many tough calls that Ime Udoka has for Game 7. If Horford doesn't have it going again, you turn to Rob, you turn to the more, you know, the offensive rebounder, the guy who can kind of block you out of nowhere, or do you go with the veteran to see if he has what he has left in the tank for you in a Game 7?
All right, we'll leave it right there. His name is Brian Robb. You can find him on Twitter at Brian T. Robb, and you can read his stuff over at Mass Live. B-Rob, thanks so much.
All right, thanks, boys.
All right, take care. That's Brian Robb joining us here on the program with his fantastic insight, as always. 617-779-0985. That is your phone number. We will continue with your phone calls as we keep picking at the carcass here of this Game 6 with the Celtics. It's you work with Jones long enough, you eventually start taking on that same way of doing
persona.
Things. It's
yeah.
true. It's, and I don't know about persona. I wouldn't say I'm quite there with the persona.
Okay.
But the habits are certainly there. You know, the
maybe just on-air persona?
Maybe that's it. That could be part of it. We'll see. Anyways, we'll talk about what's at stake for this Boston Celtics team with this group if they lose Game 7 tomorrow. We'll get to that next.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show on the home of the Seas, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It's time to talk Celtics.
Man, how did the fish grease them?
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Oh, he missed them both. Jaylen Brown misses both free throws with 2:18 to go in a tie Game 6. Jimmy Butler across half court in the logo. Moving to his right around Derek White. He gets in deep, elevates, and scored in the foul for Jimmy Butler. A monster swing. Jaylen Brown misses 2 free throws. And Jimmy Butler, having the night of his life on the biggest stage the game has to offer, can put Miami up by 3 with 2:06 to go as he gets a 4th foul on Al Horford.
Huge moment in the game last night. One of the biggest moments, I'd say. Butler had that big jumper in the last minute. But you want to talk about deflating moments? Times where it seemed like the Celtics just, you know, took their foot off the gas. How about right there? 3.5 minute mark. Marcus Smart gets fouled by Kyle Lowry, makes 2 free throws, ties it at 99. And then you had Smart miss a 3. Bam Adebayo missed a shot. Derek White stripped Kyle Lowry, and then going back the other way, Jaylen Brown gets fouled by Lowry. Goes to the free throw line. Tie game with 2:18 left. Misses them both. Tucker gets the rebound, hits Butler streaking down the sideline, and he goes in for a layup, gets fouled, and now it's a 3-point game. Tucker hit a couple free throws after stripping Jason Tatum, which was another big turnover in the end of that game. Just a brutal stretch there. Al Horford misses a 3, and all of a sudden, this one is a 6-point game, and that was all she wrote. There were other moments there, and the Celtics did have chances after that, but it seemed like those 2 missed free throws followed by the Butler layup on the other end, that was probably when a lot of people started writing their game stories, I would think, Gasper.
Yeah, no, that was huge. No question about it. I mean, the missed free throws from Jaylen Brown. I mean, to miss both of those, that was a killer for the Celtics, and he has to make those free throws. And they had already gotten a reprieve because the Marcus Smart missed 3 you referenced was the possession where he basically dribbled it into the ground and then jacked up a 3 with 4 seconds left on the shot clock. And Miami got the rebound and went the other way. And then Derek White, who had a great fourth quarter, made a smart play and was able to steal it. And basically they got it back. They were basically able to erase that terrible possession and send Jaylen Brown to the free throw line with the chance to take the lead. And then he misses the free throw. So, you know, that entire sequence starting with the really bad possession where they didn't move the ball and Smart jacks up a 3 all the way through Jaylen Brown missing the free throws through Jimmy Butler, that sort of whole sequence there sunk them.
Yeah, it was brutal. I mean, that was a brutal one. Then the Heat had that challenge. You know, like the call, I felt like the challenge, I understand. I mean, it's the last minute of the game. That's when you probably should use a challenge. But man, you know, I just, I sort of feel like these challenges, you know, that one, they were charged with a timeout. That call stood up. It was Max Strus, right? It was, who did Strus foul? I forget. Tatum, I think. And they challenged whether or not there was a foul and ended up, the call stood and Tatum got the free throws and it was a 4-point game. So it's not like things were completely over by then, but then Jaylen Brown in the next possession with a chance to cut it down to two gets called for that charge. And again, they don't have a challenge to use there because they wasted it on Grant Williams. And you know, those things come back to bite you. And I think go back to Ime Udoka and this weird belief that he has that whenever one of his players says, oh, no, you got to challenge that. I'll do it. He does it right away. He goes for it. He does it. It's like he doesn't even ask questions. He says, I trust you. I believe you. And with these Boston Celtics, Jasper, that is a dangerous game to play because, as we all know, these guys love to embellish their injuries. They love to, you know, act like they didn't foul anybody or that they did get fouled, even when it's clear as day that that's exactly what happened. And, you know, Lowry's like that on the Heat, so it's not like they're totally innocent. But with the Celtics, oh, Ime's got to be a little bit more discerning when it comes to those.
Well, it's tough because he's, you know, I think he trusts his players and he tries to make them part of the process. So you're right. You know, Ime has to be more discerning, but also these guys have to be more honest with themselves. Mm. Like, and you can't have role players running around like they've never committed a foul. I mean, that's just not reality. So, you know, I love Grant Williams. I love what he's brought to this team. You know, Marcus Smart, I love what he brings to the team. But, you know, you can't have these guys behaving after every foul like they didn't commit a foul, like they've never committed a foul. It's problematic. It puts the coach in a tough spot of, you know, hey, do I show I trust my players or do I just ignore them or what do I do? And you know, the Grant Williams in particular has a pretty bad track record, I think, at this point of asking Ime for challenges on things that are fouls. And now to go back to that Max Strus challenge, you know, I didn't have a problem with that for Miami.
Right.
It fouled him out of the game. There's 40.7 seconds left. And honestly, I thought the Heat could have won that challenge, not because he didn't foul Tatum, he did, but it seemed like, and sometimes they'll wave these off, it seemed like his initial contact was actually with the basketball. Yeah. And when I watched that replay, it seemed like he got the ball and the ball came loose and then he made contact. And sometimes they'll wave that off. They didn't there. So, you know, that one stood. And then, you know, Jaylen Brown, offensive foul, correct me if I'm wrong on that one, Arkin, but I think didn't they originally call that a block? And then that was the one that the officials went and looked at. And because they said restricted
Lowry was set. Yeah. Or was it Oladipo? It was one of those two. But yeah, they were set and then they were outside.
It was Oladipo.
Yeah.
It was Oladipo. And then the officials looked at that one and said, nope, we got it wrong. And they could have looked at a lot of calls and said, we got it wrong.
Totally.
We got it wrong. He was outside the restricted area charged. So that one got overturned. So, you know, that was not necessarily the circumstance there where the Celtics would have been able to use their challenge, but certainly on that Jimmy Butler out of bounds play earlier in the quarter. Yeah. If they had their challenge there, they 100% would have won that.
Yeah. You just reminded me of the other really bad call from the game.
What was it?
It was when Oladipo blocked Robert Williams and they called a foul on him and he got all ball. You remember that one? Williams is going up. Oladipo comes up behind him. It's a great chase down block. Gets all ball and they called a foul on him. I thought that was a very bad call too.
These are all Tyler.
It was reminiscent of that Tyler Hero block on Marcus Smart too, which they also called a foul. But yeah, I mean, those weren't games that I think tipped the scales one way or the other. But it does sort of go to show that you know, if you have a problem with the refereeing, I don't think the refereeing's been good either. But I think it's been pretty much equally bad. I think that's
I would agree with you. And I want to, you know, ask you the same question, just to flip it a little, that I asked B-Rob, because we kind of teased it. But just like what if the Celtics do somehow lose this game, you put on your Brad Stevens hat, you put on your G. Willikers cap. What would you do
if they lose game seven? I think if you're G. Willikers, you have to keep this core intact as best you can. You have to try whatever it takes, really, to keep Brown and Tatum together. Because what you saw for 3+, maybe 4 months, I guess, is safe to say now, is some of the most dominant basketball I've seen a Celtics team play since I was a little kid in the 80s. I mean, really, like that's how far back you have to go to look at a stretch where this team played that well. I've followed the team all my life. I didn't see Hondo and I didn't see Bill Russell and those guys, but this was
how about the 2009 Celtics though? Didn't they win like their first 20 games or whatever that was?
They were a great team too. And listen, but I really think that what you saw this year was different, and I think that that there's a possibility for this team to build off of it. So even if they do come up short, I would hate to see them make a move where, you know, you're sort of panicking and just making an impulse because you had a bad game seven. I think getting to this point is a step in the right direction, certainly from last year. And I think they showed me enough this year that I'm not willing to sort of blow it up. I was willing to this past offseason. I was willing to trade Brown. I was willing to trade everybody. But I think now you've discovered something here. And even if they come up a little bit short in this particular series, I think you still try and build off it.
Yeah, so for me, you know, I would go back to the old faithful of takes that I have. I would definitely keep Tatum and Brown. I'm not breaking them up, but I would look at peeling off Smart. I really would. Mm. I'm sorry. Like if they lose this and you have these three guys, they've gone to three conference finals and they've lost all three with that core of those three guys, and in two of them they were up 3-2. And I'll tell you why. Because I feel like what happened last night, and let's see what happens in game seven, I think they're going to win. But I think it's like emblematic of a fit issue potentially that rears its head at times, which is that the Celtics elevate Smart to the same level as Tatum and Brown. And that's why on a night like last night, he feels free to take 15 shots and 9 threes. Because nobody steps up and says, look, we appreciate what you do. You're the defensive player of the year. You're so important to what we're trying to accomplish. We want you to know that. But these two guys are the head of the snake, and then you're the most important guy after that. No, instead, even Ime Udoka at his like opening press conference was talking about Tatum and Brown, and then he paused and he added Smart in there. It's like Tatum, Brown, and Smart, and like Smart. They're all on the same level, and they're not.
No.
And because the team feeds him this idea that he's on the same level as these guys, you get nights like last night. And to me, it's emblematic of a larger issue, I think, with this team of believing at times they're better than they really are. And I think it starts with him. And it's not all his fault, because, again, if you have a parent or somebody close to you telling you you are something that you're not and you want to be that something, of course you're going to believe them.
Yeah, that's true. I have a question, Gasper. Where is Big Jim right now? Why isn't he here today?
I have no clue.
Do you know where he's going? Do you know where he's going, Jeff? Do you see this picture he just tweeted?
So I'm actually locked out of Twitter. My account got hacked.
Really?
Yeah, it got hacked last night.
By like a crypto bro or something?
I don't even know. I mean, hopefully people aren't getting crazy tweets from me can't even look at it.
This is awesome.
First of all, let me see what's going on with Gasper. Doesn't look like anyone's tweeted anything under your... Okay. They may have hacked you, but they haven't put anything up there yet. Okay. Jim Murray is on a plane with David Ortiz right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Where?
I don't know. I don't know where they're going. I don't know anything. All I know is he's standing on the plane. It's him. Then there's Big Poppy. It looks like he's wearing the same clothes he was wearing yesterday. And the young lady that Big Poppy was with last night, who, when I glanced up at the TV, I thought for a second was Abby Chin. Not because I thought Abby Chin was dating Big Poppy, but because this young lady looks very much like Abby Chin. I saw her. I was like, is that Abby Chin? But it's not. It's definitely not. So don't quote me on that one. But it did kind of look like her. Anyway, Big Jim on a plane with Big Poppy going somewhere. I have no idea. I don't know where we're going. I figured you know.
I don't have, he didn't tell me where he was going. I have no idea. I mean, I would guess somewhere in Florida, but I don't know.
Well, must be nice. Anyways, 617-779-0985. That is the phone number. We see a lot of you waiting patiently to get on the air. We'll get to your phone calls next.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Sports Hub Celtics Show drives the lane.
No! Scored and the foul.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show and Boston's home for the Celtics. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Home and road really hasn't meant much to you guys in these playoffs. You guys haven't let one loss turn into a bigger thing throughout these playoffs. How do you kind of keep the guys focused on that and, you know, the quick bounce back, knowing that everything you want is still there?
Yeah, I mean, we've won the closeout game, obviously, game seven. And for us, we've won two in Miami. So that's the positive of it. We know we can go there and win, but just have to make it harder than it is. And at times it feels like we're doing that, not taking advantage of what's in front of us, and just overall sloppy basketball on both ends. And so we can't have that on the road. We've done a good job getting off to better starts there, and just have to maintain that through their physicality.
Ime Udoka seems confident. The Celtics seem confident. Jimmy Butler also seems confident. He said, we know we had to come here and get one, and we know we're going to win the next one, too. Everybody's guaranteeing victory here. I mean, it's game seven. I guess you have to. But that comment there from Udoka, Gasper, that one stuck out to you. It stuck out to me, too. They made it easy for Miami. They made it easy for Jimmy Butler to score. They made it easy to defend Brown and Tatum in the second half. It was a sort of close game, I guess. I mean, you know, like it was a single-digit game, which you can't say about a lot of these games in this series. But it did seem like the Heat weren't really pressed all that hard.
No, I mean, it stood out to me, too, just overall the identity of this team. And in terms of saying that's coming from the head coach, saying, yeah, we just have to make it harder than it is. And at times it feels like that's what we're doing. And that's what they've done sort of all year long. And Derek White also said, if it was easy, it wouldn't be us.
Right.
So, I mean, that's really sort of the theme for the Celtics. They do everything the hard way. And I think they'll win this game seven. But, you know, my concern would be if they don't, you know, that's a really tough lesson. That's a really hard lesson to swallow and a hard lesson to learn, because it's not just this series, Arcan, but also in that Milwaukee series. Look at game five. You know, they gave that away. They blew the 14-point lead
right
at home in the fourth quarter. You can only play with fire so many times before you're going to get burnt. And I would just hate to see them get burnt in game seven of a series they really, really should win.
Let's go to the phones here. What do you say? 617-779-0985 is the number. Let's start with Joe in Everett, who's been waiting a while. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I got a couple questions about the coaching.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they didn't double-team Butler hardly at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, Miami's always double-teaming Tatum. So I just don't understand the logic in that. And then the second question I have about coaching is, why in the world do they have Tatum and Brown ever taking the ball up the court unless it's on a fast break type situation? Both of them aren't very good dribblers. And you have two guards that are pretty good, Smart and White. So, for instance, it takes them, Brown and Tatum, about 10 seconds longer to get the ball up the court than the guards.
Right.
So right there, you're costing time to move the ball around, which is another thing they didn't do last night, was move the ball.
I agree with you there, Joe, and I think that was a big problem, and this team's much better when they're moving the ball more. I'll say this. I think Brown and Tatum in the fourth quarter moved the ball too much. I think the ball needed to stick to them a little bit more. I think they needed to be more confident in their own offense and not just take what the defense is giving you, because what the defense was doing was baiting them into the lane, letting them kick out to Horford and Smart and whoever else who couldn't throw the ball in the ocean. And meanwhile, you have Tatum and Brown completely neutralized. Like, that's what you had. Why didn't they double-team Jimmy Butler? I have no idea. Maybe Marcus Smart told them, no double teams. I got them. And Butler just kept burning them over and over again. But, they made no adjustments on him, it seemed like.
I mean, traditionally, that, like, they, I don't think they doubled a lot of guys. You know, they did double Durant in the Brooklyn series, but those weren't kind of like traditional doubles. Like, you could tell they were almost like rules to those doubles. It was like, if he turns his back, like if he gets to this point in the lane, then we're gonna help. So it just seems like they don't really sort of believe defensively a ton in the idea of traditional, like, all out doubles. And I get it, because if the other team moves the ball, you're going to create an open shot. But if that open shot is for Victor Oladipo, I'm good with it versus Jimmy Butler. I just think there's certain nights where you got to look at it and say, one guy is killing us, you know, especially after like Lowry fouled out, you know, one guy's killing us. Let's make somebody else beat us. And if they do it, we'll just tip the cap.
Yeah. Let's do Eric in Mansfield here before the top of the hour. Hey, Eric.
Hey, guys. How's it going? First of all, everybody's forgetting the training staff from Miami did a heck of a job on Jimmy Butler's knee, because a few games ago, he couldn't do anything. But last night, you know, that knee looked great.
Yeah.
But what I wanted, you know, it was just, I don't know what they did, but I mean, that was a Jimmy Butler from game one. But, you know, to that previous caller, it is frustrating sometimes. It looks like to me when Jason Tatum brings the ball up, it looks like in December, Jason Tatum, the isolation where you'll just see him and time will be coming off the clock and he's pointing out like the isolation. The ball movement was not there last night. And for game seven, if we lose, this needs to be a huge eye opener to Brown and Tatum that you guys are too inconsistent. One game you guys put it on and one game you don't. And I am really concerned going back to Miami. If Jimmy Butler's knee is feeling good, that I can see him dropping another almost 50 points. I just don't see us stopping him.
Yeah.
I mean, last night it was very crazy. And, there was no ball movement. I mean, nobody played great. Probably the best player I think last night for us, the best I really do think was.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.